Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about transition, transformation, transfiguration. When does it show up in our life? When does it have to rear its head and we say, oh my gosh, you can't come here? I'm good where I am. You can't show up. We kind of push it back. We deny it. We say it's not part of my life. It's not part of my identity. And it's not something that I am going to do. And I will run in fear and prevent it at all costs. What are we talking about? It's about the evolution of the soul, the transformation of transfiguration of our body through our decades in this human experience, but it also, too, is about how we see ourselves in retrospect and how we can see ourselves going forward. So almost as you could see it, for every generation, we always see that we are going forward in some different form and we're showing up as a different being in a different time and space. Can we see now in the year 2020? We are having these evolutions within one lifetime. It seems to be speeding up. We seem to be transitioning, learning, expanding, and growing so much more so quickly, even within 20, 30, 40, or even 60 years. Today, my guest is Dorothy Rice. Her book is Gray is the New Black. And truly, Dorothy will share her story about just exactly that, transformation, transfiguration, shedding, and also being able to come out on the other side just as glorious as our soul is. Dorothy, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Dr. Jeanette. It's great to be here.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you. And what I also find, too, don't you think, Dorothy, that maybe we're doing things a little bit faster these days? You know, are we seeing so much going on in our lives that we're saying, I don't want to be that anymore. I already did that. And we're saying in the years of our 60s or 70s, wow, we have so much more time to do something else, yes?
Absolutely, absolutely. My mother is in her late 90s and was still doing many things into her 80s. And my dream is to be writing and churning out books post-100. That's the hope.
Yeah. And don't you think that if we look back at it, many generations before us, their lives were considered very short and they just chose an exit door much earlier. Yet now we're saying, well, maybe we want to learn something, but we still want to stay here and hang around, right?
I think that's true. I also think that perhaps historically, women in particular haven't had the luxury of thinking about what is life beyond marriage and children and grandchildren into so many other areas. So I, like most women or many women, I've been all those things, so 5 children, 2 grandchildren, a full career, but I always wanted to be a writer and held that off as something that I didn't have the right to do while I had all those other responsibilities. So for me, the big transformation that came about in my 50s and then gained speed in my 60s was I did have a dream, and I had subjugated that dream to do all those other things. Not that I regret doing any of those things. I'm very proud of all the life I've led, but I wasn't ready to stop growing and trying new things.
But don't you think also, too, Dorothy, is that your book, Gray is the New Black, it really set it up and said, so you want to write? Well, let's just not have an illusion story. Let's have a reality story. And what you started with was your life from the beginning. Isn't that the real essence of seeing what you're really made out of?
Yeah, to a great extent. I mean, I think our lives are a journey, and we're at different points at different times. For me, the major epiphany that led to writing the book was that I had held this dream since I was a little girl of being a writer, and I had the idea that once I started, the fairy tale would be realized, and all of the things that had bothered me throughout life would instantly be solved. And what I realized is that, well, no, of course not. I was writing, but I was still myself. And all of the doubts and the baggage that I'd carried around for years, not feeling good enough about how I looked, not feeling completely content in my marriage or whatever it might be, all those things were still there. And so I decided to come to terms with who I was, and that writing wasn't a magic solution to that. It was simply a vocation, what I wanted to do. That was different than what was in my soul, what was keeping me from being happy.
Yeah. You know, sometimes people will say that I really need to heal my heart or change something or give back. And they kind of always want to run out and do these outside things. But in essence, when you wrote this book, you took what you really wanted to do, but you said, now I'd like to use it as a tool for my soul. So in other words, your soul was speaking. It wasn't just coming from an ego mind. And when your soul speaks, don't you think that that truly can lead you down a path where you could find out different things about your life?
Absolutely. I have no doubt about that. It led me to look at things from my past with totally different eyes, not as a victim of events that had happened, but as a human being that went through things as we all do and didn't want to live in that victim mentality anymore. So, yes, I absolutely agree with you, Dr. Jeanette.
Yeah, and don't you think, I mean, you're in your elder years now as I, don't you think it also, too, is about when we create these stories and are able to unleash them and give them light, it's really, truly changing history. Because if you look back in the 1950s and 60s and 70s, women, did you not know anyone that was not a victim? Come on, everybody was a victim. You know what I mean? There was all kinds of trauma. There was all kinds of schmutz. All kinds of stuff was going on, you know. And it was, just go home and shut your door and everything's okay. And that's when hell broke loose. So I think that was very common in those days. It was accepted. And when we started transitioning and learning and evolving in all these decades since, we've learned, hey, you know, that house kind of was weird. I didn't know that was all about. I didn't know there was another way. And what you and I are talking about now is, where do we go now? And the now is to release that and say, this is me, and I'm not attached to that, right?
Correct. It doesn't define me. That's absolutely right.
Yeah. I'll tell you, it's a tough thing when you want to start shedding it, because if you look at it, so many times people will say, oh, but you mean you want to forget me? You don't want me around? You don't want me this and that? And it's almost as if that seems to create that alter ego of the victim mentality, don't you think?
Yeah, I wasn't so much confronting people in my current life as in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that confronting led me to reconnect with my best friend from the ninth grade when we were both going through hard times, and that was such a warm and wonderful experience. I pushed her away because of trauma, and she pushed me away because of trauma. And coming together both in our 60s, it was just magical. It was like a forgiveness and a healing for both of us.
Right, because I always say is that the events in our life are like Girl Scout badges, you know, and we just keep tacking on the schmutz that we go through life, and then all of a sudden we say, you know what, I'm done with this thing, and they kind of like one by one just start to fall to the ground. And that's when we truly are able to be free. I think sometimes we say, oh, but I dealt with it. I'm okay with it. I'm good with it. And then you turn around and it's still stuck to you. Don't you think sometimes until you really have an essence and it says we're done, that maybe something might be stuck there?
Oh, absolutely. I hadn't realized how much was stuck to me until I started digging into it and remembering and writing scenes from the past and writing about it and talking about it, that I had been profoundly affected by things in the past and allowed them to color how I saw myself. In other words, I had developed a whole cocoon of insecurities and fears. I didn't like myself very much. I didn't think I was pretty. I didn't think I deserved love. I didn't think I deserved success. Mm-hmm. And these things sound kind of silly to say, because on the surface, I've always been a successful person. It's not
right.
as though I walked around with a dark cloud over my head or didn't have a lot of richness in my life. I've been blessed with children and, you know, wonderful things, good jobs. But mm-hmm. in my heart, I never felt I deserved it. And that mm-hmm. was all about how I'd allowed the past to color my own experience of life. And that's really the transformation I've gone through, is realizing, and it just sounds trite, but I really am okay.
Yeah. Dorothy, let's talk for a second about the concept of hair, okay? I'll tell you, if you are over the age of 60, you have been down this road and you know it
yes.
intimately. You know, you can share the wildest stories ever. Well, mine is that I always had long brown hair. And I mean, I looked back and I saw a picture the other day, probably when I was in eighth grade. And I said, my goodness, I have like this gorgeous, long, silky brown hair. And then I remember when I went to ninth grade, it was, okay, we're cutting your hair and you're going to be a blonde. And, you know, they were doing, do you remember those caps that you put on your head and you'd use a crochet needle to pull your hair out?
Of course.
Right. Well, I had a mother that was very not so good, and she would really dig that sucker into your head, you know? But it was always that my hair had to be right, you know? And I can remember every day, every morning, it was wash your hair, set your hair, spray it with hairspray, and never touch it again for the rest of the day. And it always had to be blonde, you know? And I did this process for decades, you know? And I think sometimes the idea of, don't you think, perfection and how we should appear was really a fragment of history at that time?
Absolutely. Although my hair, I call it my hair moir. The memoir of my hair is almost the opposite of yours. I was born with very curly hair to the point of being frizzy, uncontrollably so, and so my mother cut it very, very short because she couldn't figure out what to do with it. When it grew out, it was just a bush, I mean literally an afro, and she never knew how to deal with it, and I, as a consequence, kind of struggled with it through my young adulthood and finally decided that the only solution was straightening and all the flat irons and all kinds
right.
of extreme things. And so part of what triggered the first time I went gray is I overprocessed my hair and it started to fall out.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, huge chunks of it. So I lost all of the hair around my crown. And I have a lot of hair. So I went cold turkey. I stopped coloring my gray. I stopped straightening. I stopped doing all of the things I was doing. And grew it out, and the consequences were profound and not in such a positive way. I felt instantly invisible. Certainly
right.
people looked at me differently. I felt ignored at work. And
yep.
then sort of the coup de grace was when I was out to lunch with my sisters, and the waitress complimented me on my beautiful daughters. my sisters
yeah.
thought it was funny, but I did not.
mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
So
you know,
I went back to the hairdresser and I colored it, and it was, you know, nearly 10 years later that I started growing it out again. And this time it felt right. But in the book, Gray is the New Black is really just a metaphor for accepting whatever it is about yourself that you've been hiding from. So
right.
I'm no advocate for dying or not dying. I don't care if people are free to do whatever they wish with their hair, of course.
mm-hmm. But I also think, too, that shows about, sometimes that usually shows about how you feel inside. But you know what? I feel like I want to be a blonde, and that's just fine, too. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So it's,
yeah.
if that's what your uniqueness is, let it go. And if it isn't, don't. Now I'm in my 60s and I've stopped coloring my hair blonde. It was just getting to be too much. It was just, you know, I just wasn't into it anymore. And many people look at me and they say, you look so dark. You don't look right. It's not you. Who are you? Or they'll say, oh, who's that in the picture? I mean, even when I went to my daughter's wedding, my sister walked right by me and I went, huh? You know, and it was like,
oh,
really?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And I kind of went, oh, you know, I'm just going to let this go. Because I could have very easily gotten extremely ruffled, but I kind of let it turn a few weeks in the corner. But then I just said, okay, I'm going to let this go. And I think that that's really important for women because they feel as if their looks, their hair, their job, their position, where they are in their life with their relationships is really their identity. Don't you think so?
And it isn't. That's absolutely right, and it isn't. At the end of the day, it's only hair.
Yeah. Yeah. Although still, our hair still meets everybody before we do, so come on.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I had the exact same experience of people not recognizing me. And but goodness gracious, if that's all I meant to you was the hair on my head.
Correct. Yes, and don't you think that to not be afraid, just as your hair fell out, don't be afraid when people start falling away because you know what? It's A-okay because I don't need that extra weight around me. Don't you think you also find that?
Right. If that's what it was about for someone, it's a certain appearance or appearance of youthfulness, then that wasn't a real friendship.
Right.
The other thing I found is that it's about what you're projecting as well. When I look at photographs of myself from the first time I went gray, it's almost as if I had an apology in my eyes. I was clearly insecure and not owning it. Mm-hmm. Now I have a head of long salt and pepper and silver hair, and I get it blown out, and you know, I flaunt it. And I smile about it, and people come up to me on the street and compliment me for my hair. And it's not so much the hair, it's that I'm making eye contact, it's that I'm smiling, it's that I'm owning it, it's that I'm clearly not ashamed of it.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. Let's talk for a second, Dorothy, about our relationships with men along our life paths. Good Lord. You know, I don't know about you, but I'll tell you, I can make the darkest of all of us cringe if I kept telling the stories. But, you know, I think, don't you think sometimes, too, those stories need to come out somewhere, somehow, just to be able to see that what is going on in your past or in your thoughts. It's, in other words, let's just transcribe this movie thing that's going on in my head that I called my life. And once I transcribe it, I can put it in a book. I can put a nice pink bow around the outside, tie it up, put it on the shelf, and I'm A-okay.
No, that's absolutely right. And that is a huge thread, not only in this book, but in all of my writing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main things I did in the process of attempting to heal and reach a different level with this book was to go back to a sexual assault in high school that I, not to be a victim, but that I allowed to define how I viewed men for many, many years.
Right.
So I was passive. I allowed myself to be hurt. I allowed myself to be degraded. And I believe I almost felt that that's what I deserved. So looking back now, I can see that subsequent boyfriends and husbands, I picked from that same model. I picked men who would not treat me well, who would not respect me, and who would not lead me to respect myself. None of that was conscious. My mother used to kind of point it out to me, and I would just get angry with her, you know, because I didn't want to be that kind of person. But looking back now, after a number of bad relationships and two awful marriages, and now in my current marriage, which is thankfully much better, my third marriage, I see that, those first early experiences really defined what kind of woman I thought I was, which was one that didn't deserve a whole heck of a lot. And if you take that back even further, I was never abused as a child, but my father was very cold. There was never touch or love in our home. There were no words of, you know, support or that I was attractive or loved or anything like that. And my older brother was schizophrenic, so I had built in a fear response to men, that men were cold, men were distant, men did not give you affirmation. And that's what I expected. And again, none of this was intellectually, you know, understood. Other people could probably look at me and say, what awful choices she's making.
Right, but you know what? And as you're speaking about it, if you look back at those times, we were coming off of the wartime when men, you know, were thinking about, I mean, look at how war was, you know, or look at how the Depression was. People did not have value for anyone or anything because they saw people getting killed. They knew there was no value because they did not have enough to even survive. So how could you expect our now eyes in the year 2020 to look back at how we grew up and say, you know, oh, that was a problem? No, it was normal then. That was where history was, don't you think?
Oh, it was very normal. My father was a World War II vet, and both my parents were, of course, children of the Depression. And they believed that a parent's job was to feed and clothe and keep a roof over the child's head.
Correct.
And they did that. My mother would actually say, this is a job.
Yes.
Being, you know, the mother to you girls is a job, and I'm going to do it. There was no joy to it.
Right. But, you know, I think also, too, if we look back on it, I think, you know, as you shared about all your relationships with men, you're here to be able to look back in retrospect and say how wonderful all those relationships were, because even though you saw that they looked bad at the time, in essence, they taught you so much more about yourself, and that's what you were there for. In other words, the other person, while they might have been acting out in a very inappropriate way, they were there to show you something. And you said, oh, cool, I get it, I got it, and you moved on. So almost, I always look back at my relationships. I mean, like, you know, yes, it's more than my fingers and my toes. And, you know, I look at them and I say, absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for being the slut you were, this whore you were, or the bad person you were, or, you know, that absolutely horrendous, you know, abusive person you were. Because you know what? I looked at it and I said, oh, that was absolutely fantastic, because I was still able to come out of it. I was still able to be breathing. I was still knew that there was love in the world. I still knew that everything was going to be okay. And I still knew and know myself somehow. So don't you think your soul said, we got this. We're just going to take you along a bumpy ride to get to the other side. And you and I held on. And you and I held on, right?
Maybe so, maybe so. I can get there with just about everything, but the guy that raped me when I was 15,
right.
I can't get there
yeah.
with that.
But also, too, his purpose was to be able to defeat something, and you didn't let him defeat you.
No. I mean, I was
down
for a while.
That's right.
No.
Yeah. So I think sometimes so we can look back and we say, oh, fantastic. You know, I work a lot with end-of-life clients, and I just did a show with someone. We were talking about, what do you say when someone is reaching that point? And we're saying, oh, let's have a party. Like I had one client, we had a big birthday party at 4 in the morning when she only had moments to live, and we had cake and birthday hats and balloons everywhere to celebrate her life. And another person just wanted to go in peace and quiet with no family members. You know, I think sometimes we tend to say, what is our life made out of? And do we look back in retrospect before the end? Do we say that we have to dish out all of our mistakes and get them out on the table? Or can we just say, you know what, I'm okay, I'm content with keeping my secret box? We all know people who pass on and there's this little box and it's your secret box, you know? And we say, let's just let them deal with the schmutz now. Don't you think there's so many aspects out there? But
right.
truly
Everyone
by
is
you
so different.
Yeah,
Everyone's
but by
different.
You writing it, you aired it all. And you
yeah.
said, I'm a free soul now.
Yeah, even in just my own family, I have two sisters, and we're the best of friends. And one is the kind that will keep it all in a sealed box. That's just her way. She doesn't believe in you know, getting this stuff out there. When I first started writing, I think she cringed every time I came out with an essay or something. But now it's, you know, accepted that, oh, that's what Dorothy does. Dorothy writes about her life.
Right.
And others don't. It's how I process. It's how I experience life. It is, in a sense, by living it twice, going through it and then processing it in my mind and turning it into words. It's how I experience life.
Don't you think that there's such an influx right now of women over the age 60 who are writing a lot of novels? I can honestly say I do radio. I've just recorded 25 shows this week, and probably half of them were women over the age of 60, in which they were just able now to say, I'm ready to express it and let it go because I want to express and experience life on a different plane. And then they're ready to say, man, just close. You know, it's almost like you walk out the door and toss the keys behind you and start a new life, don't you think?
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
For me, you know, I do think we touched on it before. There's a very practical element. I think women, by and large, are used to holding things together. And I was a single mom for 15 years. I had to work 10 hours a day. I had to take care of the kids. Yes, I wanted to write, but did I have the bandwidth to do it? I did not. And so it really wasn't until the kids were by and large grown and gone. I had one high schooler still at home when I started writing. I was finally in a position where I was earning a decent paycheck and had retirement kind of out there. So it wasn't necessarily just a matter of reaching a certain level of maturity. It was the practical matter of not having to work all day at a job that was demanding and tired me out and then come home and take care of kids. So, you know, I think this kind of renaissance of lots of women writing, it's wonderful. I also am gratified to see that younger women are able to do it too. You know, or do whatever their passion is. I mean, I'm so impressed when I meet young women writers who are juggling day jobs and raising children and still finding time to express whatever, you know, their creativity is, whether it's writing or art or anything, music.
And what I loved about your book is that you explicitly wrote about your experiences. And I think many times people will say, oh, they just want to dust it. They just want to put it in there and just like one or two sentences and hope that nobody will notice or ask them questions. It's sort of, are you right? And in fact, that type of writing, you're still writing the illusion of how you saw your life versus the reality of how you experienced it. Don't you think that is more important to say, what is my truth, and put it on the page and not worry about the illusion?
Yeah, that's a great point. For me, writing memoir in terms of the skills that you use is no different than writing fiction. I believe writing in fully developed scenes. So I actually take myself back there and start playing a movie in my head and start writing or typing. Recreating what the setting was, who said what they were wearing, what the emotions were. So, yeah, I don't want to describe a memory. I want to relive a memory with all of the senses and all of the detail that you would experience in a fully realized film or show. That's how I experience it. It's also how I see things that I didn't realize. So when I look at my life as a movie that happened to someone else or as myself as a character or an actor, I find that I'm experiencing these experiences anew in a different way. I can look at them from the outside rather than from the prison of my own emotions.
Yeah. And that's actually the most freeing point, because then when you get done with it, just as I said, you know, I look at your book, you know, and it's a black book. And you know what's so interesting is if you had a pink ribbon that would go along the outside and say, okay, now tie it up and set it to the side. You know what I mean? Like, you know how you know those memoirs, if you would tie them and you would close them and they would be sealed, you know? So then it's complete. It's good, and it's wonderful. Don't you think it's a wonderful place to be in 2020 right now in our elder years?
Absolutely, and I love your visual of the pink ribbon tied around it.
Yeah, because it can close it now, right? It's finished.
Yeah, it is finished, and now I'm working on something entirely different. So
right.
I'm working on a novel that I hope will be fun and light and quirky. So almost the opposite.
Right, absolutely. You know, it's something you said a minute ago about, of our parents and stuff and, you know, the job of taking care. You look at the millennials now. The women don't cook. They don't clean and do laundry. Are you kidding me? And, you know, I mean, like, they do almost nothing. And I'm going, what do you do? And they're like, oh, I don't know. And I'm going, oh, dear. I mean, my kids are in their 30s and 40s, you know. And I'm sorry, 20s and 30s. And it's like, it's such a, it's so 360 from how we've experienced life, don't you think?
Yeah, all the generations are very different.
Mm-hmm.
All of our five children are very different, too.
Yeah, it's incredible. And you wonder how or where the world will, like, shake out, and you just want to stick around for a while, right?
I wish I could. I wish I could be here for the grandkids and all of that.
Yeah, we'll never know. Well, Dorothy, it was such a pleasure to speak with you today, because I think sometimes we make our life say it was such a hardship, it was the hard way. And really what you and I are sharing today, have fun with it. Put it all down on paper, give it some light, and then be able to tie that sucker up in a ribbon and say, I'm setting it to the side, and I've got more decades to go, right?
Yeah, also for me, a huge issue is forgiveness.
Yeah,
we've nothing to be ashamed of. As you mentioned, living, you know, whether we had many, many relationships, whatever it was, some were bad. We have nothing to be ashamed of. We lived our lives. We learned things. It's time to forgive ourselves for whatever it is we think we've done. We did our best.
Absolutely. You know, all I need to, you know, when I talk to women, we talk about it and I'll say, fantastic, that was great. And they're like, what? It was the worst thing ever. I'll say, that was the most fantastic thing, you know, and they're like, oh, okay. I can see it from the other side, you know, and I think sometimes just as you shared, you know, looking back on things, it's like, can we allow ourselves, just as you said, with forgiveness, to say, you know what, set that free. You know, there's no such thing as left and right and good and bad and, you know, all this other stuff. It's sort of like it just is, and here's my life. Right?
It's all shades of gray.
Absolutely. Well, Dorothy, it was such a pleasure to speak with you today. Can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about your work? That would be wonderful.
Absolutely. So I do have a website, dorothyriceauthor.com, and there's links to many of the essays I've written and to how to purchase my books and all kinds of good information. I also blog there at dorothyriceauthor.com.
Well, very good. Well, Dorothy, it was such a pleasure to speak with you today. It's about giving light to our life, no matter what kind of holes we were in, right?
That's right. And pleasure to talk with you, Dr. Jeanette. I enjoyed it.
Oh, you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you'd like to find out more information about Dorothy Rice, again, her book is Gray is the New Black. Please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page for more information. And truly, if you're looking to say, I've got all of this stuff from my past, how can I shed it? How can I walk through these imprints? I offer free sessions. And just reach out. Check out my website. It is on the bottom of today's show page. Send me an information on Contact Us page, and we can get this started and talk about how things are, where you're at, and how you're able to say, man, I just have to let some of this stuff go. How can I do it? And to be unafraid. I offer sessions that are a soft place for your words and your heart to land. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.